Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Happy opening day, opening week, Postmasters, whatever you're celebrating around here. We're going to be celebrating the Maryland Lottery Tour. We're going to let ourselves play in Hampstead, Carroll County. We're going to be back at Greenmount Station, where you know I love the crab cake up there, so it's going to be delicious. Going to have some scratch-off tickets to give away. Our friends at Wise Markets providing our Wise Conversations as well, and our friends at Goodwill Industries underwriting and supporting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour as we take it out on the road to Hampstead this week. We're going to be at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog, not a Coney Island, not even an island town anymore after 100 years now, out on Philadelphia Road in White Marsh. Upper White Marsh, we'd say. My wife and I went up there for some hotcakes and some eggs a couple weeks ago for breakfast. Now open. It's a beautiful diner, a little different than Highland Town. We're going to sit down and have a crab cake with Andy, let him tell his Highland Town story. I'll be telling my old Memorial Stadium stories about my dad and getting the old hamburgers with the onions right there in the window and a squirt of ketchup on there and the roll. Oh, man. And then we're going to be at Conrad's Crabs. I may have some actual crabs at Conrad's Crabs as well. It's the 27th, and that's on a Wednesday. We're going to do that little special in conjunction with the Maryland Lottery and Goodwill Industries. Lou Jones and I came together for the Liars Luncheon. I had a different lunch experience than you had after the luncheon, and there'll be time and place for all that. But, you know, I find the Liars Luncheon to be interesting. I think Eric likes to breadcrumb for the smart people to give some tea leaves, almost like Paul Lynde in the center square at Hollywood Squares. Just a little something to think about, a little food for thought for the road. Ortiz, the same thing. And then, you know, they kind of cap it off by signing Calais Campbell and continuing to add to the portfolio of how they're going to try to get better this year, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I would actually disagree a little bit and say that the overall theme seemed to be that all of the eyes were toward the draft, and then they make a couple signings and they bring back Calais Campbell and they bring back Josh Bynes, which aren't exactly shocking.
Liars Luncheon for a reason.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and I wrote this at BaltimorePositive.com, and I kind of cobbled together my 12 Ravens thoughts and kind of had a tough time with that because a lot of it was just very generic. They're obviously not going to give away the secrets. They're not going to tell you who they're going to draft and all that. But my comment was, if you've seen one Liars Lunch and you've really seen them all, the names change. They'll talk about, oh, okay, we like this receiver. We like this edge guy. You know, they'll talk about some prospects here and there, but it's really the same. And you know, I think overall though, at just kind of looking back at the week and looking at bringing back Josh Bynes on a 1-year deal, bringing in Calais Campbell on a 2-year deal, $6 million guaranteed. You know, it feels the structure is probably going to be more of a 1-year deal, which you're talking about a guy who's going to be 36 anyway. So not exactly a big shock there, but these were two guys that we knew there was interest in them returning and bringing them back. And
these guys may have more value to the Ravens than any other team to some degree, especially Bynes, right?
Bynes, I would say, yeah. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. I mean, the Ravens 2019 and last year, they went young, right? I mean, the idea was, you know, in 2019, it was Kenny Young. It was Patrick Owosso. CJ Mosley had gotten a boatload of money from the Jets. And the Ravens said, hey, we're going to go young with those guys. We got Chris Board. And we know how that worked out. It didn't work out well. So they bring in Josh Bynes. They bring in LJ Fort, and those guys stabilized the position. And it wasn't a strength of theirs the rest of the season, but it wasn't a glaring weakness. 2020, they bring in Patrick Queen. They draft Malik Harrison as well. You have those two guys. You know, they had their rookie ups and downs in 2020, but nothing that felt so far out of line that you said, okay, this is a major problem. Unfortunately, last year, it was a problem early on to the point where Malik Harrison gets benched. You know, they bring Josh Bynes into the starting lineup. He's playing the mic. They move Patrick Queen to weak side, although he still played plenty of mic down the stretch as well. They kind of use those positions interchangeably. But the point is, Josh Bynes had to come in for the second time in 3 years and stabilize that position. Again, it's not a strength. Bynes is 32. You're not talking about a long-term solution here by any means, but it does make the position a little more stable going into the draft. Now, does that mean they're not going to draft an off-ball linebacker at some point over the first, let's say, four rounds, because they have nine picks over the first four rounds. I think that's certainly within the realm of possibility.
Does it feel like nine picks, right? Like, as we would all sit here for the lives, let's say, are they going to draft this or that? They're going to draft everything. They got nine picks.
Well,
they're going to draft players all over the field.
As I said to Dennis, with talking to him last week, they have a lot of needs. They have a lot of needs, and they have quite a few positions where you'd say, all right, maybe it's not a need, but it's you really want it, right? I mean, it's very much something that you would prioritize. And I would say, with having re-signed Calais Campbell now on the heels of signing Michael Pierce last month, are the Ravens hurting so badly on the defensive line where you feel you need to reach 14th overall, or do you need to use your second round pick on an interior lineman? Well, no, but you're still talking about, Pierce is going to be 30. Campbell will be 36. That's an old group. Derek Wolf, we'll see if his health allows him to return in 2022, but you need more youth there. You need young guys. But the point is, when you make a Calais Campbell re-signing, when you re-sign Josh Bynes, to your point, I think Calais Campbell would have had value anywhere he went, because he still was playing at a high level, even if he's not a 10 sack interior lineman anymore. Still an elite run defender, still a guy who's going to take on blockers and set up someone else with pass rush line games up front to get sacks.
I think
to get
he really wants to win a Super Bowl too. There's a whole level of that in him that burns.
Sure.
That is the reason he's hanging out at 36 and thinking he can do that here with Lamar Jackson speaks volumes again to the organization and its ability to recruit and retain the football players it wants. The guys they want to have around here, they tend to keep them.
Yeah, for the most part, although I would say, reports indicated they offered Bobby Wagner more money than the Rams ultimately paid him, but he's an LA native, wanted to stay in the NFC West. So the point is, whether it's a team picking the Ravens over team A, B, C, or D, they're clearly in that tier with the Pittsburghs, with the Green Bays, with the LA Rams now, certainly the Chiefs and the Patriots, and go down the list. They're in that tier that is an attractive place to play. And ultimately, you got to pay. I mean, it's not as though you're going to get these major discounts. You still had to guarantee Calais Campbell $6 million, which, hey, he clearly was someone who could have gone somewhere else and played and still played at a high level. But, they clearly have established themselves over the better part of two decades of being a team that, they're competitive, and, they're losing seasons like we saw this past year are rare. I mean, it was the second losing season of the Harbaugh era, so they need to get better. There's no question about that. I think they're an interesting team from the standpoint of, I would almost say, when you kind of look at the landscape of the whole AFC, not just the division with, what Cincinnati's done on the heels of being in the Super Bowl, and the Browns, regardless of what happens, with Deshaun Watson, their profile on paper looks better, even if it doesn't equate to the win-loss column. But you look at the whole AFC and all the moves that have been made, I feel like the Ravens are kind of the ultimate half empty, half full kind of team. How do you view them? Do you look at everything that went wrong last year and say, okay, well, Lamar Jackson wasn't as good down the stretch before he got hurt as he had been earlier in the year, and these guys are all a year older, or all these injured players going to come back and be healthy? So if you look at it from that perspective, then you might have concerns. And I'm not saying that perspective's wrong. I think there's some validity for at least elements of that argument. And on the flip side, you'd say, okay, they were 8-3 in early December. At that point, then they lost their top corner, Marlon Humphrey, for the season. About a quarter of football later, a week later, first quarter, or what, early second quarter in Cleveland, they lose Lamar Jackson for the rest of the year. And yeah, they go from 8-3 to 8-9. But of those six straight losses, all but one was a one score game. So you can kind of, and they are going to have all these guys come back and be healthy. And so that's why I said the Ravens to me are, is it half full or half empty? I mean, that's where they are right now. If it's half full, then they should come back and be a very legitimate, formidable Super Bowl contender. If it's half empty, doesn't mean I think they're bad, but it might be that they're looked at as more of a second, maybe third tier playoff team in the AFC, as far as being more of a wild card contender. So, I lots lots to be decided, lots to be determined in terms of where that ultimately falls. And certainly going back to what you were saying, as far as pointing out that they have 9 picks in the first 4 rounds of this draft, that's going to be a big part of it. Because, and Eric reiterated this during the Liars luncheon, and this is one of the things he was being truthful about. You know, if you want to talk about things that wondering what were truths, half truths, and damn lies.
He loved the wide receivers last year.
A truth was that this is going to be a team that continues to build via the draft. And even though they were more aggressive this year in free agency than they typically are, still weren't nearly as aggressive as other teams you'd look to around the league. So they're going to be a team that continues to build, and they're not going to go for these all-in types propositions. They're going to try to be as competitive as they can be every year. They're going to have a flatter cap situation, ideally, so you're not in a position where you're having to make a ton of moves and cut guys and use voidable years and all those different things. And look, we can argue that the Ravens could do things like the Rams a little bit more. The Rams just won a Super Bowl. You know, you can make that argument, but it's very clear from a philosophical standpoint that they're not going to be that team that does that. There are times to be aggressive. I think that's true. And, you know, we could go back and look at the last 2 or 3 years and maybe say, hey, maybe you should have spent that money on and gone out and gotten a wide receiver rather than signing Earl Thomas. Not that anyone knew that that was going to turn out the way it did, but, you know, you make moves with the information that's at your disposal at that point in time, and then you see how it's going to turn out. And certain things, you're going to look really smart, and other things, you're going to look back, and you're not going to look so smart. So no one bats 1,000 in that way, but the Ravens are going to stay true to how they do things, and we'll see ultimately how that turns out. But let's keep in mind, as much as we can talk about free agents or trades or even players are going to draft this year, realistically speaking, we talked about this even before the season ended, because we knew once Lamar Jackson went down, I think everyone realized that, okay, there's not going to be some magic Super Bowl run here. Even if Lamar makes it back for the last week or two of the season, I think we all knew that. We came to peace with that probably a week or two before Christmas, most likely. But you know, the reality is you've got a lot of really talented players who did not play last year. And yeah, there's the possibility that certain ones won't come back and be the same player. Marcus Peters is 29. You know, he's coming off of a serious knee injury. Maybe he's not going to be the same guy, but he could be the same guy. And J.K. Dobbins is only in his 3rd year, and Gus Edwards is only in, you know, year 4, or year 5. So, it's really a case of talking about a lot of these guys. They come back healthy. You forget how much they were really missing last year. And I didn't even mention Ronnie Stanley, who arguably, other than Lamar himself, is probably the biggest X factor in terms of how good this team, especially on the offensive side of the ball, is going to be. So, you know, there's a lot that has to go well. There's no question about that. But also say there are a lot of good football players scheduled to come back, and a lot of guys they were missing last year. And even with everyone they were missing, this was still a team that was in playoff contention in December, in playoff contention until the very end. So that's where it is so interesting. And that's where, again, I go back to it. And I truly feel this way, not just as someone who's covering the Ravens specifically, but you know, I they're that team right now that it's really, you can look at it half full or you can look at it half empty. And, you know, it's a wide range of, are you optimistic or are you pessimistic? And I think there's some pretty compelling arguments to make across the board, but clearly this draft that's only now a couple weeks away, huge. I think Eric would be the first to tell you that where they stand right now with their cap, with some of the players they have under contract, with Lamar's situation, which we'll continue to talk about, there's no resolution coming down the pike anytime soon, it appears. But this draft, I feel, with all those picks, you know, first 4 rounds, 9 picks, it's absolutely going to be pivotal to determine, are they going to be a playoff team, which, you know, they've been a playoff team, or are they going to be a team that's ready to take that next step? And I think this draft, it's difficult for me to envision them taking that next step without them coming away with one or two pieces at the very least that make an immediate impact. Doesn't mean they have to be in the Pro Bowl, but guys that are getting on the field, playing a lot, and making a difference. And if they don't have that this year, if it's a draft class that's a little bit slower to come along, that's where then I probably am a little less optimistic about this team going into 2022.
Well, this is where your Josh Bynes and your Calais Campbell and these 30-something-year-old players throughout the roster, that the step up for that. The guy they draft that's better than Villanueva was, right? That's going to take the veterans' playing time away. Where is that guy coming from? That's going to take, that's going to force Earl Thomas off the roster, force Marcus Peters, he can't play. Give me the next corner that can, right? So that's where this depth part comes in. Because all of these names, you throw them all out, Ronnie Stanley, any of these guys, Dobbins, these guys coming back. Some of them are going to break again. Some of them aren't going to get to post. There were too many injuries to think everybody's going to come back.
Yeah.
And you're going to put the genie back in the bottle, and it's going to be May of last year again, and everybody's going to be young and spry and healthy. I mean, in order of significance and in order of probability, Stanley's, you know, 1A, right? Like,
yeah.
To your point, if they use the 14th pick on a left tackle – I don't know. I mean, we tell you that they know he can't play if they do that. If they use a fourth round pick, you'd say, well, there's an insurance policy. But they have to be thinking along those lines for several of these positions, including who's going to be the next Ricard and Nick Boyle, right? Drafting into who's going to be that guy at some point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I mean, they're both under, I mean, they just re-signed Ricard. So clearly he's going to be around at least for, you know, presumably the first 2 years of that deal, but you're right. And I think that for me, and I mentioned other than the assumption, you know, I mean, Lamar has to come back and be Lamar. I mean, he had a bone bruise in his ankle. There's no reason to think that that's going to be something that is a problem. You know,
he's
something
throwing
that's
the ball
chronic.
Well, I've seen it on Ravens.com.
Yeah, there have been plenty of videos, and that's, hey, throwing to Rashad Bateman, by the way. So that's good to see. But that said, Ronnie Stanley is still absolutely critical. And there's no way to downplay the significance of that. If he comes back and he's the Ronnie Stanley of 2019, that offensive line, you know, we can talk about Patrick McCary at center, you know, and what that looks like. We can talk about whether it's going to be Ben Cleveland or Ben Powers or Tyree Phillips at left guard. You know, I mean, and most teams and most offensive coaches would tell you, if you have dominant tackles, if you have good tackles, let's say, you can figure out the interior. You know, it doesn't mean you're going to have Marshall Yanda, Matt Burke, and Edwin Mulitalo going from right to left with your interior, but you can win. You don't need to have guys that are that great to win football games, but you need tackles. You need tackles who can play well. And the Ravens didn't have that last year. You know, they had McCary did an admirable job at right tackle and he played well, but he also missed some time, keep in mind. And when he was out, then it was Tyree Phillips. And then you had two tackles who were really struggling. So I think Stanley, it's fascinating. You just laid it out there. If their 14th overall pick is, let's say, Trevor Penning, who, you know, left tackle, who isn't considered one of the cream of the crop that could go in the top five or the top 10, but is still considered a legitimate first round tackle. If they're taking him, that would lead you to think there's some, not just general concern and unknown. That leads you to think that they're not expecting Ronnie to come back and be right. You know, they're almost, not that they're writing it off, but they're really planning for not to have him.
Well,
or for him.
Money aside and cap aside, somebody better play left tackle.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, you
win.
Right.
Whatever you got, it's a sunk cost at this point, but you better go win football games and you better block your ass off.
Exactly. And that's where, for me, that is where it is tough to try to figure this out. And you mentioned the fourth round. I think it would be very ambitious to even call a fourth rounder as being, you know, kind of the project insurance policy. For me, it would be much more, do you use one of those, you know, do you use your second round pick? Do you use one of your two third round picks on a tackle that has some, you know, some left tackle traits that, all right, he's not ready to start week one this fall, but let's say, you know, we've kind of looked at this as a either or, as Ronnie Stanley comes back or he doesn't. How about this scenario? He comes back, he's healthy enough to play, but he's now an average starting left tackle as opposed to being an elite left tackle. Okay. He's still probably, you know, under that scenario, he's still going to be your left tackle this year. But now you're looking at next year. You're looking at 2024 and you look at the cap number and you have a value problem there that's not adding up. So that's where, to me, do you need to look a little more carefully to try to grab a left tackle that, okay, even if he's not your guy now, he might be your guy next year. He might be your guy even next year. It'd be tough to cut Ronnie Stanley given the cap implications, but 2024, you might be drafting that guy. So I think that's where it's tough because, as we said, they have all these other positions to address. I mean, you mentioned cornerback, and I mentioned corner in passing with Marcus Peters. Who's this team's back? Who's this team's number three corner right now? Tavon Young just signed with the Bears. Anthony Averett's with the Raiders. Chris Westry just left. I mean, you go down the list. All right, Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters starting outside corners on paper, assuming they're both healthy coming back. Yeah, I'll take those guys up against anyone. But who's your nickel? Is that going to be Brandon Stevens? I think he can be. I don't know if he's going to play 50 snaps a game there, though. I think he could be a situational guy there.
But you talk about draft picks working out, that if he does work out, you would look at that and say that's the kind of value they need to be getting.
Oh, no question. I mean, he was a third-round pick. I mean, he's not going to be a starting center, at least right now, because you just brought in Marcus Williams and you still have Chuck Clark. But, you know, can Brandon Stevens be that fifth defensive back that, hey, he's going to play some nickel. He's going to play some third safety in the way that they kind of envisioned Jimmy Smith the last couple of years doing that, but he couldn't stay healthy in order to do
that
it.
That could be 50, 60 snaps a game. That's
it
a
could
big
be.
Job.
It could be, sure. And they like him. But he's kind of, he's a tweener right now. Is he safety? Is he corner? You still need some other corners. And right now they don't have that. I mean, you look at the list, it's Kevon Seymour. It's the guys we were talking about coming off the practice squad last year. It's Amon Marshall, who hasn't played in 2 years, former fourth round pick who had a bad knee injury 2 years ago. So they got to draft a corner. Now, as much as we've talked about edge, we've talked about offensive tackle. We can go down the list, defensive line. Look at their cornerback situation. I wouldn't at all be surprised if a month from now, or not even a month, 3 weeks from now, we're talking about, the Ravens, maybe they drafted Trent McDuffie 14th overall, out of Washington to be, their third corner and, allows you to, move Marlon Humphrey around a little bit like you did a couple years ago. And you need depth in the same way that in 2017, their starters at the time going into that draft were who? Jimmy Smith and Brandon Carr. You had Tavon Young. You drafted Marlon Humphrey. At the time, everyone was kind of scratching their head and say, why did they draft another corner? Well, he was the best player available then. And that was a good pick, by the way, even if it wasn't well received on draft night necessarily. I easily see a scenario where the Ravens' first pick could be a corner because it's that important. And you look at their depth chart right now.
Well,
after those top two, and
Marlon
I get it,
Humphreys,
they're Pro Bowl guys,
right?
But
when the draft is your crack at those guys.
Well, and that's the big thing. I mean, when you're picking 14th overall, and I even looked at this, I do this every year. It's just a fun exercise. I look back at the Ravens' entire draft history, and I see each pick that they have, whether it's 14th overall, and then go through all their other picks. And I look at the history and I try to match it up. Some years there isn't a guy. For example, the Ravens have never picked a player 14th overall, but they have picked a player 12th and they have picked a player 16th. So 14th is right smack dab in the middle there. Well, Haloti Ngata was 12th overall and Marlon Humphrey was 16th overall. So that should tell you, and I look, every draft class is different. I understand that, but that should tell you that 14th overall pick should be a, kind of a cornerstone player for you. Doesn't mean he's going to be Haloti Ngata in the Ring of Honor. Doesn't mean that he's going to be Marlon Humphrey making all pro teams, but he better be somewhere close to that.
And
at least
better be a guy you want to give a second contract to.
No question about it. I mean, go back to, we talked about inside linebacker. I mean, has Patrick Queen been a bust at this point? It's way too soon to use that kind of language with him. There's certainly been upside and you've seen splash plays and you've seen him play well at times, but can you say with confidence right now, Patrick Queen's going to get a second contract here? The jury's still out there. So that tells you now he was later in the first round, 14th overall. You got to nail this pick. And they know that. And they haven't picked in the top half of the first round very often in recent years, very often since their first 4 or 5 years in Baltimore. So it's important and they need to nail that pick. And as we said, even if it's not a guy that's a perennial all pro, to your point, it's the best way to put it. It's got to be a second contract guy. There's no question about that. So could that be a corner? Absolutely. Could that conceivably be a left tackle? I'd be surprised, but that would just tell you that they don't have much confidence in Ronnie Stanley. And that's probably a bigger issue than taking a left tackle regardless. I would just tell you that, hey, you're probably not going to have that guy you had before. So go down the list. I mean, edge rusher, the guys are there. I mean, Jermaine Johnson, Trayvon Walker. I mean, we'll see who exactly is picking 14th overall, but or available 14th overall. But you know, a lot of different directions they can go. But the important thing is they've got to nail it. You know, it's got to be someone that starts day one and makes an impact his rookie year. And if you can do that, and then one or two other guys along the way, and then a couple other guys, you know, maybe next year, year after that, then you have the makings of a really strong draft class. And they need that. That's where they are. Cap-wise, Lamar, all these big contracts they've already given out. Yeah, they need some young players to come through and really step up big for them. And this draft class is a great way to do that.
Luke Jones is going to be around all week, all month, getting us ready for the draft. Turns out the NFL schedule now coming out later after the draft. So we were used to that for about 25 years, COVID, and the schedule gods have changed all that. So wherever the Ravens are going to Tampa, New Orleans, Jacksonville, Munich, London, I know they're going to Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Cincinnati, and we are going to be going to Hampstead in Carroll County. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'm going to have my Betty Boop scratch-off tickets to give away on Friday. We'll be up there having a crab cake with my pal Chris. Looking forward to it. I got some special friends coming by. I might even invite Luke by to talk baseball before it's all over with a crab cake. That's up north near where he's from up there. We've had some good nights at Greenmount Station over the course of time. This week, it's a Maryland Crab Cake Tour, all presented by the Maryland Lottery, as well as our friends at Goodwill Industries. Had a great conversation with John Baylog. We're cleaning out our closets around here, doing a spring cleaning for our friends at Goodwill Industries. We also want to give a shout out to Leonard Raskin and our friends at Raskin Global. Leonard's going to be coming on a little later on this week as we get ready for tax time. So you can go check that out at BaltimorePositive.com. Some great tax tips to get you ready for April 15th or if you need to extend. I'm wearing my State Fair shirt. I had the best breakfast brunch of my life at the Beaumont on Sunday. It was insanely delicious. I've had great chicken and waffles at State Fair. They do brunch at El Guapo. It's delicious there. I had a steak and eggs, phenomenal, but something really special about the Beaumont. So they started their brunch. They're doing it on Easter. Get on over, see all of our friends at State Fair, El Guapo, and our friends at the Beaumont, the newest restaurant right on the corner, steakhouse, special wines, and a delicious Prosecco as well. He is Luke. You can follow him out at Baltimore Luke. You can find me under my name. We're on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Snapchat and Instagram and all those places, including opening day baseball and also getting you ready for the draft. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, having our wise conversations right here at BaltimorePositive.com.